RN presents Topical Currents. Today's focus is how to enable students, and adults for that matter, to identify fake news items. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Fake news is nothing new, but today's digital media enables high-speed proliferation of news aimed at fooling readers. You're probably familiar with clickbait, where outrageous claims link to ads. There are websites that masquerade as traditional news sources and bots that automate fake news items. We'll learn more about the Miami-Dade Public Library System and its use of the News Literacy Project. It has what's termed the Checkology Virtual Classroom to teach media literacy to kids in the community. That's Topical Currents, First NPR and Regional News. And Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, it's Topical Currents, Wednesday edition. This afternoon, we discuss a term often articulated in President Trump's recurring Twitter posts, fake news.
In presidential phraseology, the expression is aimed at authentic news organizations, such as TV networks or newspapers, such as the New York Times or the Washington Post.
Otherwise, it refers to untruths or distortions of numerous varieties, including clickbait and deliberate falsehoods. So how can facts be sorted from untruths?
We'll learn about the News Literacy Project and how it partners with the Miami-Dade Public Library System. Here with info about a kids program is Miami-Dade Public Library System Public Affairs Officer Layla Khalil. Welcome to you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
Great to have you.
We also have Karen Runlett of the Knight Foundation. She's a journalism program officer, and she administers the news literacy program here, which, of course, includes funding. Welcome to you, Karen Runlett.
Thank you so much for having me.
And from New York City, it's Damaso Reyes, the New York program manager of the News Literacy Project. Thanks for joining us, Damaso.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with you, Damaso. Let's begin with an understanding of the News Literacy Project, and we're going to refer to it often during the program as NLP. When and by whom it was founded and its goal?
Well, NLP is a 9-year-old nonprofit, and we're founded by Alan Miller, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with the LA Times. And our goal is to give middle school and high school age students the tools that they need in order to sort from fact from fiction in the digital age. So we started with a classroom program in several cities across the country, and that was quite successful. But as we saw last year, there's an incredible demand all over the country for news literacy education. So last year in May, we launched our Checkology Virtual Classroom, which, you know, brings our news literacy curriculum to a much wider audience. And this is the program that Miami-Dade Libraries has been implementing this summer, and we hope will continue to work with us to implement over the coming years.
What constitutes media literacy in students in the junior high and high school level?
Or at any age, for that matter.
Well, we define it a bit narrowly. For us, it's really being able to understand that information comes in different categories or different flavors. The difference between, say, news and opinion, or news and advertising, or news and entertainment. And also being able to assess the credibility of news and information that young people come across in their lives. Now, primarily with our students, that's social media. So when you come across a tweet or a post on Tumblr or a post on Instagram, how can you, as a student or as an adult, verify whether or not the statements included in that information are accurate and the purpose of that piece of information? For example, we now know that a lot of celebrities are paid to post on Instagram. So if you follow Kim Kardashian, for example, and she posts a picture of a new skin cream, is that an advertisement, or is that something that she genuinely likes, or both? It can be very difficult for young people to tell, so we help give them the tools to do that.
I think the FTC is also addressing that problem right now.
They are, but this is such a new phenomenon that while the FEC has laid out guidelines, a lot of the celebrities, a lot of the influencers actually don't know what they are, so they end up running afoul of them without even knowing it. More importantly, the viewers, their followers, their fans don't know that one of these endorsements is actually an endorsement, and that's an important thing to understand when you're looking at something, is whether or not it's a genuine endorsement or whether it's a paid endorsement.
This Checkology virtual classroom, tell us more about that. Is that a proprietary teaching software?
It is. So it's an online destination that teachers can register for, and it includes 12 core lessons that range from everything from how to identify information in these different categories, as I mentioned earlier, to the role of algorithms in shaping the information we get, to viral rumors, to what the standards of quality journalism actually are. So we have 12 interactive lessons, which are hosted by journalists and subject matter experts, and they appear in video form and help guide the students and introduce these concepts that then, through the lessons, students execute and build mastery. And the goal is to have the teachers introduce these concepts, help guide the students, and they can do that in a one-to-many format in a classroom, and students can actually do it one-to-one as well, so they can receive their own individual logins and then do the lessons either in the classroom or on their own time as homework.
Layla, let's bring you into this. Tell us about the partnership between the News Literacy Project and the Miami-Dade Public Library System. How did the collaboration come to be?
Well, the Miami-Dade Public Library System, we actually heard about it through the Knight Foundation, and they connected us with the News Literacy Project. And once we heard about it, we absolutely thought it was a natural fit for the library system. Yeah. So that was earlier this year. And then starting in June, we began offering the courses at 6 of our libraries, 5 of our regionals, and the main library, which are our largest and most centralized branches. And today actually is the last session of the series. It's happening at the South Dade Regional Library from 3:30 to 5, if anybody is interested in attending. And it has been a very interesting experience. It's been an eye-opening experience. A lot of the students, a lot of the teens who have taken these classes it's really interesting to see what they have to say about it, because each one gets something different out of it.
Like, give us some examples.
For example, there was one young man who wants to be a journalist. So he decided he wanted to come and take these classes, and he actually heard about it. I think he heard about it on WLRN from an earlier story, and told his mom that he wanted to come and take these classes. And he came and he took them, and he learned a lot from it, and I think it helped him solidify the fact that this is what he wants to do as his career in the future. And it's laying the basis for him and giving him the guidelines. In some of the classes that I went to and watched, there were students who were taking notes. They were listening to the classes and they were taking notes. There were other students who were just really into the videos. The fact that it's online is a big plus for kids today, and they really enjoy the interactivity and the fact that it's very topical. A lot of the subject matter is very topical, and the examples that are used are also very topical. So it's a natural fit for the libraries.
And how is it going? I mean, so you're seeing some results in the ways you've mentioned when you say it's eye-opening.
I think it's going really well. As all things, it's the beginning. So we've had dozens of participants over the course of the weeks that we've been doing it. We do plan to continue it in the fall, coming up now after the new school year begins. It's a little hit or miss sometimes with some of the programs. So you'll have 3 or 4 students. Some days there were in reality that nobody showed up. But in many instances, you had at least two participants. And so our young adult librarians are the ones who are pretty much administering the programs. And so they've gotten a lot of good feedback as well in terms of the participants saying that they have been able to actually learn about how to detect what is real and what isn't, what is true and what is not. And it's really opened their eyes as well. And it's empowered them also to ask the questions.
Karen Rundle, tell us more what the Knight Foundation expects from this program.
Well, we support journalism because we believed in informed and engaged communities, and we believe that informed and engaged communities are vital to democracy. So what's interesting about this is, first of all, we're deeply concerned about the spread of misinformation and disinformation, period. And this work sort of demand side. So if you talk to a lot of journalists and you say, how do we combat fake news? They say, do better journalism, do more journalism. That's supply side. This is demand side. These are the customers. These are the consumers. These are the readers. This is the community. So you're preparing the next generation to consume all this great journalism and really to be able to navigate and to see what's true and what's not. So that's where this program is particularly unique.
I was just wondering, I mean, I know it's important for the next generation to be able to distinguish fact from fiction, but what about older generations who are also, you know, doing the exact same thing? I mean, they're taking a lot of news, fake news, and considering it real. We see a lot of that right now. So isn't that pretty important to address that too?
I think that is very important, yes. And so we spent a lot of this year really working on different programs that would really address the spread of accurate information.
Right.
That's what we really want. Mm-hmm. That's what we want people to be. And we actually, just in June, we did something called an open call. We asked anyone, do you have ideas, solutions to help spread accurate information? And we had 800 responses. We announced the winners. We selected 20 winners, and we funded about $1 million. We gave each winner around $50,000, up to $50,000. We had 20 winners, and they kind of came in with three different sets of ideas. They were sort of clustered into sets of ideas. One was news and media literacy. So universities, in some cases, might have had, other nonprofits might be working on similar programs. Another area was fact-checking. That was enormously important. A lot of people... technology solutions, again, academic solutions, community-oriented solutions around artificial intelligence, around bots. And the third category was really civic engagement and bringing audience members in to really understand the process of journalism, whether that was events or bringing journalists, pairing community members with journalists to mm-hmm. tell stories so that they would understand the process. Because journalism is actually sort of a mystery to a lot of people.
Right.
They don't understand sort of the rigor around it.
We're speaking about the News Literacy Project and also their partnership with Miami-Dade Public Library System, and also somebody from the Journalism Program Officer from the Knight Foundation who administered this grant in partnership between the Miami-Dade Public Library System and the News Literacy Project. We'll be right back, and we'll take your calls and emails.
And it is today's topical currents. We're back at 20 minutes past 1 o'clock. We're talking about the News Literary Project, a partnership with the Knight Foundation and the Miami-Dade Public Library System. We're speaking with Damaso Reyes out of New York City and Layla Khalil and also Karen Rundle of the Knight Foundation. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. Our number 1-800-743-9576. Perhaps you'd like to tell us your feelings about fake news and how you go about checking your accuracy when you're online at looking at stories or in your newspapers or on television. Also, what's your most trusted source of daily news? What do you depend on? And if you'd like, you can also tell us what clickbait you're ashamed that you've fallen for. I could add a few of those myself.
Well, what's yours, Joe? Let's
I think some of the things on like the Andy Griffith Show, like, you know, stories you never knew about Aunt B or something like that.
It's like the check-out.
Anyway, our number 1-800-743-9576. Also, email radio@wlrn.org. Also, a quote from President Trump yesterday. He tweeted, quote, Only the fake news media and Trump enemies want me to stop using social media. That's 110 million people, he says. Only way for me to get the truth out, exclamation point.
Okay. There's a tweet. So, Damaso, I'm wondering, is Facebook, I think Facebook has taken some steps to try and combat the problem. And is Twitter also doing that?
Yes. I mean, fake news and the spread of misinformation has become a real cause of concern for, I think, all social media networks. But I think during the previous election, we saw a lot of mis and disinformation being spread using Twitter and Facebook in particular. So I know Facebook has worked on creating flags that users can do. So now if you see a story that you think is misinformation, you can actually flag that, and then Facebook takes a look at it, but it also builds some awareness for your colleagues and your friends who are on Facebook and Twitter as well as trying to build a mechanism. The News Literacy Project is actually partnering with Facebook to create a series of public service announcements targeted towards people who actually share misinformation and disinformation to help give them some tools in how to recognize something that's fake news or something that's misinformation before they spread it. But I think one thing that's really important to do is to perhaps more narrowly define what fake news is. It's become a term that's been used very broadly, especially by the president, but we at the News Literacy Project really define fake news as as misinformation, which is created on purpose and for profit. Now, there are lots of other kinds of misinformation in there, but I think one of the most dangerous things that we can do is to define misinformation simply as news or information, define fake news as simply something that we don't like or something that we disagree with or something that that we hold in a negative light. I think it's very important for certainly for journalists, but I think for the public in general to begin to define what they think fake news is and why that's different from other kinds of misinformation.
How does it differ from fake news of yesteryear, say the mm-hmm. yellow journalism of the Pulitzers and the Hearst and creating impetus to the Spanish-American War?
Well, in some cases, they're very similar, right? So if we use the definition that fake news is, you know, intentionally created misinformation that has a profit motive, then something like, the Hearst, pushing the Spanish-American War could be, by that definition, certainly considered fake news. But fake news is also different from, for example, propaganda. Propaganda is really designed to influence you and to scare you. Not all kinds of misinformation fall into the category of fake news, even though they definitely are misinformation.
Plus, individual readers couldn't surge that news and affect it by spreading it. It was on the newsstand, and that was it.
Right.
Except
so,
by word of mouth.
But that, that sort of was the megaphone. So I think that, something that certainly journalists in the 21st century are very cognizant of is that, journalists are less of intermediaries than they used to be. When I was growing up, if I wanted to find out what happened, I had a very limited number of choices. I could ask somebody, right? I could ask a friend or a fellow student or a parent. I could read a newspaper. I could turn on the TV, and when I turned on the TV, the news was on, I might learn, or I can turn on the radio. Right. So there were very few channels. Today, kids and adults, you turn on your computer, or more likely, you turn on your iPhone or your Android phone, and information is coming towards you. Not all of that information is news, but information is coming towards you in a way that when we were kids, information was vetted. If I saw something in the media, I could trust that piece of information was created by a journalist. It was vetted usually by one or more layers of editors, and the primary purpose of that information was to inform me. Mm-hmm. Now, young people and adults as well have no assurances that any of those things are true for the information they come across on social media.
I think many people don't realize the profit motive that's at work here, which is very important because, it doesn't have to be something even more sinister than just to make a profit. Would you like to address that, Karen?
What I can say about that is one of the solutions that's been proposed. Instead of just thinking about how to create more journalism, get rid of the incentives for the providers of fake news. So that's very much on the table as well, yes.
And Layla?
I just wanted to add to what Damaso was referring to. You could also come to a library to get information
that was another trusted source.
Yeah, about something you read. And you can still do that because librarians are known as trusted sources of information. Their role as librarians is to help people get answers to questions, do research, help them find books, help them find information. So that was another reason why the News Literacy Project was such a great fit for the Miami-Dade Public Library system and our community, because teaching people to have critical thinking skills and to discern discernment skills, and teaching people that it's okay to ask questions, that you don't have to take everything at face value, is invaluable to our community, especially when you're dealing with younger people and you're shaping them for the future. So you hope that it creates more engaged people and a better citizenship for the entire community.
Damaso, what are some of the indicators that an item is tainted, perhaps, that we come across on the internet? How about the web address indicator? And what are some of the practical ways that you can ferret out tainted news?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I always recommend to people is, what's the vector that you encounter a piece of information, right? So if I encounter a piece of information on a news site that I regularly frequent, I'm going to be perhaps less skeptical of that piece of information than I come across it on social media. And I'll give you an example. Even trusted news sources obviously make mistakes, but on social media, the bar for sharing information for example, is often much lower. Not that it should be, but it often is. So I'll give you, there's a great example earlier this year when the Patriots visited the White House after winning the Super Bowl. There was a series of two pictures that went viral. One was from the year before, where there were, you know, the picture of the players and the president in front of the White House, and there were many more people in that picture. And this year, there were many fewer people in that picture. Well, this picture went viral because the assertion was that, oh, players didn't want their picture taken with President Trump versus President Obama. But that was not true. The pictures were taken out of context. What happened was that the New York Times sports desk retweeted this picture and shared that comparison and made that assertion, which turned out not to be true. Mm-hmm. And the person who shared that tweet ended up apologizing, saying they had made a mistake. They had only spent a few minutes working on this and hadn't actually checked because they were sharing it on social media. We see that even from trusted sources sometimes. We see reporters and journalists tweeting and retweeting things which haven't been verified and haven't been checked. So one thing is to check, really think about, oh, well, I came across this on Twitter. I came across this on Facebook. So maybe I need to give it a little extra scrutiny. The next step, once you've made yourself aware of that, is to look at who is providing this piece of information. Is it a news source that I trust, or is it a news site that I'm not familiar with, or is it a site that I'm not familiar with? There are famous examples like abc.com.co that is a fake news site which makes itself look like ABC. So a lot of people just see abcnews.com and they miss the .co and don't realize that this isn't actually ABC News' site. So we as consumers of information, no matter what the age, we have to be a little more engaged with our information. You know, we can't rely, as we did on the past, to just sort of be accepting of information. Now we really have to engage with the information and come to it with a very critical eye.
And let's take a couple of listener calls or so. First caller, John in Miami. John, you're up. Hi.
Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing me to call in today.
Sure.
First off, I'm a professor at Miami-Dade College, and I teach information system. One of the problems that I see, especially with young people, is the part of critical thinking that our education system emphasizes. However, we emphasize critical thinking in our primary education system. However, It is devoid of logic skills. Unfortunately, logic, well, fortunately, actually, logic is the primary basis of critical thinking. You cannot have critical thinking without logic. And it is all my years with Broward County and Miami-Dade County, they talk about increasing critical thinking skills, but at no time do they talk about actually introducing young students to logic. In addition, the amount of media and the timeliness of media and how it's bombarded all of us, not just the young people, has accelerated, making it more difficult for young people to slow down and try to evaluate information instead of simply repeating it and not thinking and simply reacting to it.
Right.
Okay, let's get some sentiments from our panelists. Leila?
I think he makes a very good point, teaching logic skills in terms of teaching also discernment. I do also believe that the immediacy of news and social media and all the different sources for news do make it a lot easier to send things out or to share things or to retweet things that aren't accurate. That's why it's even more important to teach kids these skills through whatever ways that we can.
Karen, did you want to add something?
I would also say that it is very much about critical thinking. I would also say that, you know, technology has accelerated everything, and we need to understand technology is now embedded in every industry. It's just like commerce. It's that ubiquitous. And I think that it's important to really understand the tools and how they can be used for good or not. And so I think that it's about critical thinking too around technology and really mm-hmm. understanding what it is bringing to society.
Tommaso, did you want to add anything?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, one of the things that we've seen at the News Literacy Project is that when you teach young people these skills, they get it. They implement it. They change their behaviors. They're less likely to share misinformation. They're more likely to be civically engaged. So sometimes I feel like the conversation around fake news or media literacy, we understand that there's a huge challenge ahead of us, but I think what's good to remember is that we actually have solutions, and we have solutions that work. So I think we really need to focus on giving young people the tools they need, and those tools certainly include logic
right.
and critical thinking, so that they can understand how to navigate the digital landscape that is in itself very new to us.
We're speaking about the News Literacy Project and the collaboration between them and Miami-Dade Public Library System. On today's Topical Currents, a short break. We'll be back and take more of your calls. Stay with us.
We're back with today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman on this Wednesday edition. We're joined by Leila Khalil, Karen Rundlett, and also Damaso Reyes, the New York Program Manager of the News Literary Project. Leila is with the Miami-Dade Public Library System and Karen Rundlett of the Knight Foundation. I was wondering if you could touch on how students or adults also can be affected so much these days by sheer repetition, almost taking up the old Nazi propaganda adage that no matter how outrageous the lie you have, if you repeat it enough, some people will believe it. What comes to mind is the birther story. How can we teach youngsters that just because you hear it a lot doesn't make it true?
Karen?
So I will say, first of all, we should all be reading sites that offer different opinions. It is about getting outside the bubble, if you will. There is some research out of Dartmouth College, somebody who concentrates specifically on fact-checking, that talks about actually some of the most educated people, the overly informed, if you will, those are the folks who read deeply and sort of read the same opinions and the same thoughts.
So are most gullible.
Well, there's a fortress around them, the same kind of information. And I do think a lot of outlets have been making efforts to broadcast and share and publish different sides and different perspectives on things, and, you know, on their platform. So that's one thing for certain that you can do. And I think also, too, you should be looking at multiple sources to verify just basic information. Mm-hmm.
Does cognitive dissonance play in here, of kind of protecting your own views by what you embrace when you read?
It absolutely does. And I think that's part of the reason to read something some of the time that makes you uncomfortable, to see what other people are saying or someone that you might not necessarily agree with as well.
We have an emailer, even without a profit motive, people on Facebook share many more stories than they could actually be reading. The economy of likes motivates people to spread so-called news stories indiscriminately. That's true. But in fact, this was a little tidbit that caught my attention. BuzzFeed reported that during the last 3 months of the 2016 presidential campaign, more Facebook members shared, liked, or commented on the top 20 fake news stories than engaged with the 20 most important news stories on real news websites. Pretty.
Yeah.
Damaso?
I mean, yeah. Fake news and misinformation is designed to provoke a reaction. They're trying to short circuit the logic center in your brain and get you to feel something and then act on that feeling. So if you read an article, and most of the time when people are on social media, they're just reading sort of they see the picture, they see the headline, maybe the one or two line description of it, and then they like it and or share it. So if I see something about a political candidate that I don't like, that's outrageous, hey, that's outrageous, I need to share it, I don't even click on it. And that's part of what we're trying to teach kids not to do, is first recognize, hey, I'm seeing this on social media, I should be a little bit wary of it. Second, if this provokes a really strong emotional reaction in me, I need to be even more concerned, and then I actually need to look at it before I share it so that I can verify it. But misinformation, the people who create this information, whether it's for profit or whether it's because they want to create hate or whether they're out of perceived concern for their community, they create these memes or these pieces of misinformation with the hope of short-circuiting our ability to think logically. Mm-hmm. And they want to invoke an emotional reaction so that then we'll continue to propagate the virus.
Let's take some more callers. We've got Paul in Delray. Paul, you're up. Hi.
Yes. Hi. Is there a peer review process for political news? In the sciences, usually most technical papers that are published are peer reviewed by two or three experts in that field. Is there something like PolitiFacts that would be a way of scrutinizing the news for veracity?
Okay, Karen or Damaso or Layla?
I would say certainly. I was a journalist right up until I worked at the Knight Foundation, and there are editors, and there is strict rigor around everything that's published. And something that you may see on the front page of your newspaper, you know, was worked on for weeks, for months. It depends. There are lawyers involved in many of the high level investigations. It's not a casual process at all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for example, in the sciences, you can use a database called Science Direct. Those are all peer reviewed journals. Mm-hmm. In the technical, is there something similar that in political news?
Well, I think part of the challenge is that, you know, news operates on probably a much faster cycle than peer-reviewed studies.
Exactly.
I mean, some of these studies are years in the making. I think the other thing that we're seeing is that peer review is not all it's cracked up to be. There have been some pretty significant scandals over the past year which have shown the weaknesses of the peer review process. Not that it's not a great aspiration, but to show that it's also not foolproof. So while journalists, you know, do make mistakes, and hopefully good journalists admit their mistakes and publicly and correct them, I think most readers and consumers of news don't realize how involved the process is, both from if you're just a journalist and you're reporting out a story, to the number of editors, the number of layers that the process, you know, before you see it as a consumer, that article goes through. And as a journalist myself, I've been through that process, and it can sometimes feel frustrating, but we know that it's there to help protect us. And even with that, mistakes still happen. And I think that it's important for us to recognize that if a journalist makes an honest mistake, that's not fake news.
Right.
Next up, a West Palm Beach caller. Ben, you're up. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to explore fact checkers. Until recently, fake news, which has become, as you guys have been proving, one of the latest weapons in the assault on reason, the best antidote has been the presence of fact checkers. So we originally had discovered factcheck.org, which is funded by the Annenberg Foundation at the University of Pennsylvania. And then we discovered PolitiFact, which won a Pulitzer out of Tampa. And then along came Snopes.com, which is usually pretty good, but it's a profit-making outfit. And it's now evolved to the point where some of the fact-checkers are no better than clickbait. And so my question is, how do we distinguish the difference and between the quality of one fact-checker and another in this new age of fact-checkers?
Okay. Damaso?
I think it's important to apply the same standards to fact-checkers that you do to news outlets and to other sources of information you come across. What sources are the fact-checkers citing? Can you verify what the fact-checker is saying? I think that that goes a long way into deciding whether or not a fact-checker is reliable. But I think more importantly, I think it's important to think about fact-checkers as kind of like an antibiotic, right? You've already got a disease spreading or a virus spreading, and you need to take some medicine for it. The best solution is to prevent the disease or the virus from spreading in the first place. One of the things that studies have shown is that even after a piece of misinformation has been debunked or corrected, it can still continue to spread. Even when people know that, hey, that's not true, or that's been proven to not true, they can still believe it and propagate it. So, and sometimes by debunking it, it actually reaffirms, in some people's minds, it actually reaffirms the piece of misinformation. So getting at the root cause of it is always going to be more effective and more successful than trying to debunk something which is already spread like wildfire.
Leila?
Excuse me. I think that this is also where individual responsibility comes in, and why programs like the NLP are so important. Because, yes, fact-checking is very important, but how do you do that? And you need to teach people how to do that. So programs like this actually help people become their own fact-checkers. And usually, you know, the old saying, if something is too good to be true, it usually is. If something sounds kind of way out there, it probably is, and you should probably ask a few more questions before you take it at face value.
Well, and a corollary to that is, if it seems perfect, if it seems like, wow, this perfectly reflects what I already think and believe, that's a warning sign too.
Right.
Exactly.
We're talking about the News Literacy Project and also its collaboration between that and Miami-Dade Public Library System. Our last break. We'll be right back.
And we return with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we continue our discussion of the News Literary Project. Literacy Project, I'm sorry, and fake news. Let's go to J.R. in Coral Springs. J.R., you're up. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. This topic is very interesting, but one thing, I'm driving on the highway right now. I know I probably would be cut off, but one thing I wanted to say for the students who are listening to this program, I know in the past, what we used to do, people of my age, I'm 52 years old, you would go to the library, go to the encyclopedia, got all the information that you need. But these days, the kids use the internet. I think one of the best ways you could do that, as stated by somebody that I've heard from on the internet, his name is Alan November, where he was teaching teachers how to help kids use the internet. If you go to Google and there's a topic that you're interested in, what you do, you type the topic number and the name of the topic, followed by column EDU. So what will pop up is a lot of information from universities, and that information has been already vetted, because kids get whatever comes up on the internet, and they could write a paper, and that paper may end up being fake because they're getting the wrong information from a diversity of sources that were not vetted. That's what I wanted to say.
Okay,
sounds like a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
That's a good point. We also, librarians, there's author Neil Gaiman has a quote that he says, Google can bring you back 100,000 answers. A librarian can bring you back the right one. So even with something like Google, which is an amazing resource, you still have to make sure that you are verifying what you see there. So I think it's really important that people ask questions.
Tommaso, I was reading that the Literacy Project also addresses plagiarism. Is that correct? This could be the teacher's best friend, right?
Well, we certainly do in part. I mean, I think that our goal is really to help teachers help students understand how to find information that's reliable and how to verify it themselves. So what a lot of teachers have given us feedback is they have students who, they have a paper, they find something on the internet and stop there. Say, oh, I found this on the internet. That's my source, or that's my quote, or that's my fact, without taking the next step of checking. And, on checkology.org, which is where our virtual classroom lives, we bring students through the process of actually reporting out a story, understanding how to verify the information that they come across. And teachers find this really valuable. But certainly, libraries are a great place for students to learn this. One of the things that we're seeing is a transformation in our society of the role of libraries. And a lot of students are coming to libraries to learn research skills, to learn critical thinking skills. And this is why we're so excited about our partnership with the Miami-Dade Public Library System. Libraries are a great vector to teach news literacy and to teach critical thinking.
Tommaso, is Miami-Dade the only library system so far that news literacy is partnered with, or are they all around the country?
It's not. We have another pilot program that we're working with the New York Public Library System, which we're very excited about. And one of the things that we're seeing is actually a large number of the educators who register on checkology.org are actually librarians. So while we don't have a large number of formal relationships with library systems, we are seeing librarians across the country in all 50 states. We certainly have educators in all 50
right.
states and more than 60 countries, but we have librarians all over the country mm-hmm. because they see the value in this particular tool in helping them to teach students. It's one thing to be able to direct a student to, this place in the Dewey Decimal System, this particular book is going to help you. I think the goal of librarians is to help give students the skills to be able to find that information themselves at some point down the road and to empower them to use those skills in the rest of their lives.
Let's take another caller. We've got in West Palm Beach, this is Anthony. Anthony, your turn. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Fascinating discussion. I am a librarian, and, I don't know where to begin. There's so many good things I'm hearing. But I also have to say, as a librarian, I believe our focus has been too much on the librarian and not on what the library as an institution collects. With this day and age of all the digital access, we're providing access, but we have to forget the library has a collection, and the focus has to be on the collection. What is the collection? The collection is all the wisdom and understanding of the ages that we've collected over these years. Every little public library has these things, whether it's the great books or the great books specifically or the great books in general that have stood the test of time. And then there's reading. Remember the old adage, reading is fundamental. Another thing, we talk about fake news. It's become kind of like a meme today. Well, when we talk about fake news, what we're talking about is falsehood. And the opposite of falsehood is an old-fashioned word called truth. Nobody talks about truth today. Now, of course, I know we're not going to say there's one truth. There's truth in the general way. And we used to talk about things like that. Mm-hmm. And libraries were the place where you can go to discover truth on your own somehow through the help of a librarian who would escort you to the right books. They'd field out your reference question and help you through that. Education also is important. College is all about learning how to discover truth in order to discover truth. You'd learn the skills through liberal arts, and that included logic and rhetoric.
Okay, Anthony, let's see what Layla as a librarian has to say.
Sure.
I have to say, for the record, I am not a librarian, but I do work for the library system. We do have incredibly skilled and very talented librarians with a lot of experience who do just what Anthony was saying, and we are here to serve you. We have a huge collection of books and materials and resources in our libraries, on our website, mdpls.org, available to everyone. We do great programming. So yes, Anthony, I'm right there with you. We are here to serve the community and help you and help the community find the resources that they need.
Tell us more about upcoming news literacy project endeavors in Miami-Dade with the library system.
Well, right now, as I had mentioned, today's the final program
in the
series.
Did you say that some of the sessions no one showed up to?
It depended on the location and the times, but there were a couple where nobody came to, but there were a couple that were really well attended. We chalked that up to being the summer. A lot of kids are out of school.
These didn't start until June, correct?
They didn't start till June, and they're through August. But we are going to, our plan is to restart them now in the fall once the school year begins. We're going to continue another series.
On weekends or...
On different dates, we're looking at what times work better for, and it would probably be after school hours so that we can get kids after school as well.
So the one today, if you're interested, is at the South Dade Regional Library. It starts at 3:30, so you have time, just enough time to get there.
Yes.
And hopefully there will be additional sessions later this year.
There definitely will be. We're just in the planning stages as to when they will begin.
And again, the website is mdpls.org. And we want to thank you all for being with us. We've been talking about the News Literacy Project with Damaso Reyes. He's the News Literacy Project Program Manager in New York City. Also with us was Karen Rundlett. She's the Journalism Program Officer for the Knight Foundation, and she administers the News Literacy Project. And also with us was Layla Khalil. She's the public affairs officer, not a librarian, for the record, at the Miami-Dade Public Library System.
But a library lover, myself.
A library lover.
And a library user.
We're all library lovers.
Absolutely.
I think, on this call.
Right.
Awesome.
On this program. Thank you very much for being with us, and the best of luck with the program. It's a great program. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that wraps up today's edition. We hope you enjoyed it. Our apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Our program was produced by Richard Ives. Technical direction from Michael Stock. Jason Zabka is online producer. And Polly Landis is associate producer. Additional assistance from Peter Mertz today. Perhaps you'd like to hear this program again or send a link to a friend. That's easy from the Topical Current section of our website, WLRN.org. Also, we have the iTunes podcast of the program as well as the Topical Current's Facebook page. Tomorrow, we begin with the word about downtown Del Rey and its Arts Garage facility. Also, Linda Gassenheimer's annual report about the acclaimed Miami Spice summer restaurant discount deals. Lots off on lunches and dinners throughout Miami-Dade for 2 months. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.